Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show, and I'm very happy to be having a returning guest this week. And many of you will know who my guest is as soon as I say her name, because she's been around the Three Principles for a long time. Often we jokingly talk about the people who've been around the principles for a long time, as we call them the veterans. It's not always necessarily the nicest term, I don't think. But my guest this week is, once again, I'm speaking to Elsie Spittle. Welcome, Elsie.
Oh, thank you, Mark. And I love that, veterans. I hadn't heard that term before. I've been called a lot of things. I've been called a first generation. I've been called a pioneer, but I've never been called a veteran, and I'm honored.
All right, good. Well, normally I'm a bit cheeky when it's my male guest. I normally stick the oar in and give them a bit of a jesty insult, you know, saying that they're getting old or whatever. But of course, I wouldn't do that with you, Elsie.
Oh, you're very kind, very kind.
So, well, one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you, and I just mentioned it straight away. I saw on Facebook that you've got a new book out. You've written a number of books on the Three Principles, and I thought we'd just talk about that straight away, if you'd like. And your new book is called, and we can give that a plug as well while we're at it. Your new book is called Nuggets of Wisdom. And I was just wondering why you was inspired to write a fresh book. Are you seeing things differently after all these years around the principles?
Actually, this book has been in a work of progress, actually, several years, because it contains hundreds of insights that occurred during coaching calls with a diverse population, with executives, with couples, with individuals from all walks of life. And, you know, time passed. I used to make, after our call, a few notes about what occurred to me in hindsight were high points from that conversation. And oftentimes I would ask my clients the same thing, if they would reflect and send to me what they considered the most insightful, helpful points in our conversation. And that's how this book came about, because in the moment in our conversations when these insights occurred, I recognized the value because of the feeling, the depth of our conversation. Yeah. I knew that was important. And after the fact, as I would read my points or my client's points, again, I got a feeling of appreciation for the power of these insights. And so I see them over a number of years. Mm. And just in the back of my mind, I always felt that there was value. There was an aliveness, because there is life. And I'd also always been drawn to Sidney Jones' book, The Missing Link.
Yes.
And that drew me, just the simplicity of not necessarily having a story. The insight is the story.
Yeah.
And so there's a purity and a depth and a simplicity to just having hundreds of insights available for people to reflect on. And I will say that as I passed the book on once it was completed, to various people and to prospective endorsees, I didn't think about the volume of the content until a couple of people came back to me and said, "Elsie, my word, you know, there is so much here. There, it's impossible, you know, to go through." And I said, "Well, I didn't expect you to go through it from cover to cover.
Yeah.
I would read a few nuggets and that would be it. And one person suggested I break it into about 4 or 5 books.
Right.
But I just worked around it and spaced it out. And at the same time, add a cautionary note at the beginning of the book to just read 2 or 3 nuggets and pause and close the book and just reflect so that your own wisdom has an opportunity to emerge. And one other thing I'll add, Mark, is that at the end of the book, in regard to the resources I listed very few.
Yep.
I certainly included Sid's archived website. And the last thing I added was your own wisdom.
Right.
You know, aiming that at the readers, because there is such a wealth of resources, principle-based resources available in the world today, that I find sometimes people OD on it.
Yeah.
And they don't have space, they don't leave room for quiet, you know, for their own wisdom to emerge, which is the core value of we are mind.
Yeah.
And so I've had a few comments about the unusualness of having that in listed as a resource, your own wisdom.
I'm totally with you on that. I think I may have said this the last time I spoke to you, that when I was first impacted, I became a bit of an addict, a three principles addict, and I was watching everything and reading everything, and then there just came a point where I had to back off. I think it was my wisdom telling me to back off and just reflect a little more rather than trying to. I was very wordy. I was getting very much into the words, even though everybody around me was saying it's in the feeling. You're looking for a feeling, and that's like Sid said that all the time. But these days, I've got to be honest. Pretty much the only three principles conversations I have now are when I'm doing these interviews. Occasionally, I watch a clip. I get lots and lots of emails and resources sent my way, but. I think, like you said, and some people may enjoy a little more and get their wisdom, may say, oh yeah, watch this, watch that. But I think that is what you said is very important. Let your own wisdom tell you what's right for you in the moment.
And that was also part of what I experienced in my coaching conversations that resulted in nuggets of wisdom. Is that oftentimes wisdom is so subtle.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in a busy work environment that you may not even be aware, you know, that you've had an insight or the feeling of well-being that is kind of tucked in the midst of your busy day.
Mm-hmm.
And I really found that in working with executives at a manufacturing plant. They were my client for 12, 13 years. And oftentimes as we talked, and I would check in to see, you know, what's new since the last time we talked and how is life looking to you now? And they would share what to me were profound insights. But to them, it was like, oh yeah, this happened and that happened, but you know, and I want more. But you know, what else is there to learn? Well, hold on a minute. Let's just slow down and I'd say, did you hear what you said to me?
Yeah.
When you talked about how your relationship with so-and-so has improved so vastly that at one point this colleague was going to leave work because of you, because of your supervision of him, and now you two are best buddies. Mm. Like, look at that. What happened?
Mm.
You know, what do you attribute that change in your relationship to?
Mm.
And he'd say, well, I never really thought about it. And so there was a pathway to connecting the dots and highlighting the results back to the principles, this person's understanding of the principles at a subtle and very natural level. You know, so natural that sometimes it bypasses the intellect, and we're not aware of it until we have a conversation.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of this work that then came to life again in Nuggets of Wisdom, is helping people connect the dots from the results, the change that was transpiring, to their learning, to their inner knowledge that was manifesting in the results.
Because sometimes people don't have massive insights or big leaping insights, do they? And it's subtle, and people, like, what I'm hearing there very much is that people are, they're not really aware of the changes that are going on within them because they're just so subtle. It's only when, like you say, they check in with you after 6 months or whatever it may be, and then you point them, reflect them back to how things were, and then people can be quite shocked and surprised even, because quite often see, because, oh, I've not had an insight, nothing's changed, but mm-hmm. things have been sort of changing within working environments and life in general. So yeah, it's so interesting.
A fascinating partnership between the intellect and wisdom, that the intellect and our humanness is always the last to know. We're living in the experience of well-being, and it takes a while for our intellect to catch up to the change.
Yeah.
I certainly experienced that in the early days. You know, once I had my first insight and moved past this strong resistance I had to Sid and the message.
Yeah.
Not so much to Sid, the man or the person, because I loved the feeling of his well-being. I was attracted to the feeling of his well-being. What disturbed me was his words about where it came from. That was a no-no. Once I had the insight and I started to change, I didn't realize that I was changing until Sid pointed that out. How my relationship with my family was changing, how I had far less judgment of my husband Ken and my children and myself. That I was just more at ease in my true nature than I had been at ease in my human nature. Mm-hmm. And Sid highlighted that for me, you know, showcased that for me. Then it gave me pause. And in that pause, my intellect caught up with my wisdom, and I could see that and I could acknowledge it. And Mark, that acknowledgement was another important piece of my work and the insights that occurred in that book, is that when we do become aware of the change, again, it's like in our hurried pace in life, there are many times where we don't acknowledge it. It's like, oh, right, yeah, I see that change. Yeah, that's really cool. It's true. Okay, now I want more.
Yeah.
You know, I want more of that.
Yeah.
And so we speed past the acknowledgement. We speed past cherishing and resting in that, oh, right, yeah, oh, lovely.
Yeah,
you know, take the time to bathe in our change.
Yeah.
And then more happens without requesting it. I had somebody say that to me yesterday. You know, I've been mentoring someone, just a couple of calls, you know, one a month. And so this actually was the second call. And we talked about the difference between potential and spiritual facts.
Right.
And he had talked about being in an incredible space for a period of time, and then it vanished, and he was back into the harried pace of his work life.
Yeah.
And he said, so, you know, I want more of that. You know, I see the possibility, but I don't know how to get more of that. And as I listened to him, what struck me is that where he had been living for a while in bliss, you know, in this beautiful feeling of well-being, wasn't a possibility. That was a spiritual fact.
Yes.
That was reality.
Yes.
He was living in wisdom. There was no longer possibility. And what's so powerful and important about that is when you're living in that space, regardless of time, it doesn't matter. It can be for a moment you experience that space. It can be for a month.
Yeah.
Time is irrelevant. What's important is the experience of living in wisdom for that moment. And seeing that as evidence of our default setting, of our innate mental health. That if we've lived there for a period of time, that proves that it's always available. Our ability to go in and out of that space is the game of life. It's the interaction between the form and the formless. And so as I talked with this gentleman that was talking about possibility for this space to happen again, what our conversation moved into was, it's not possibility. That's a spiritual fact. And the more you acknowledge that, the more you see that and acknowledge it, the more it happens. That simple acknowledgement deepens our ability to live in wisdom more of the time. It's that doing without doing that Sid Banks spoke about oftentimes.
Yeah. And I'm just... But I think I've mentioned to you before, Elsie, that I came to the principles very much via yoga and Eastern philosophy, and I've seen the overlappings, and now they're in many ways saying the same things. And it struck me there when you said when people want more, in many ways want more of that well-being. In many ways, the wanting itself is getting in the way of what they think they've not got or they think they want. It's like a cosmic joke in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. And yeah. We don't always see it as funny. You know? But we're in intellectual desire. It's not so funny.
No.
But I love the smile on your face.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. I was inspired just to pick up one of my yoga books before I spoke to you. And it's a book that it's been translated into English, and it's the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which dates back, it's estimated it dates back 5,000 years. And some of this, there's been some new modern aspects put in it, but I'd just like to read this one little piece from it, if you don't mind. And it's by a quote from an Indian saint. And he said, "A person was running and running in search of light. He spent his whole life doing that. Ultimately, he collapsed and died because he couldn't reach it. Millions and millions of people collapse this way because they don't know that the light is within." And I was just steering that very much in what you were saying, when people are, "I want more of this, I want more of this." It's like, it's almost as if we're looking for something outside. It's just really letting go of that idea that it's not outside. It's turning your attention the other way.
That's right. You know what I love about that? Not only what you read, but the fact that that had inspired you before our conversation, and the fact then that for some unknown reason, I ended up bringing it up as well. Mm. You know, to me, that just shows that divine connection.
Yes.
Mind that without knowing anything about what we were going to talk about, that came up in our conversation.
Yeah. And it was so I'll just mention it again. It's so interesting. The book I've actually got in front of me, it was a book I read before I came across the principles, and I highlighted quite a few pieces in the book. And when I read it, when I look at the highlighted parts of the book now, it could have easily have been what Sid said. It's just so in line with how Sid used to speak. So it's just so, like he used to say, this is nothing new, didn't he?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love that, because he would often say as well that, You can find pure truth anywhere, you know, in the grocery store, talking to someone on the street, I mean, wherever. And I have certainly come to that understanding over the years. And I love when that happens, when you meet a so-called perfect stranger. It may be your taxi driver. And you end up having the most profound connection and conversation where you discover that under the disguise of the taxi driver and the passenger, you're one.
Yes.
And you exchange this wisdom to the point where I remember a driver being picking me up in Los Angeles when I went there last year to do some work for a client. And as we were driving, we started to chat, and he asked why I was there, and I shared a little bit about doing this work for a well-known, you know, client.
Yeah.
And started to talk about what he had learned, and that he had had a very tough time a few years back when there was this, what was called a depression in 2008, you know, kind of a depression, you know, when all the cars and the vehicles, manufacturing had gone down the tube and bankruptcy in the banks and so on. And he had lost a very lucrative business and was in an active state of depression for a couple of years. And then one day he just came to this realization that I don't want to live like this anymore. And in that insight, he just turned around and changed his life and started another business, a very lucrative now, kind of a limousine driver, where he picked up at the airport and so on.
Right.
And I said to him, as we began to have this conversation and just sharing wisdom, and I said, so do you know so-and-so, you know, my client? It sounds like you've had training with him. And he said, I don't know the man. He just requested, you know, for me to go and pick you up. And it just struck me that wisdom, it's just all around the world, and just to open to it and, again, share that divine connection of soul to soul beyond personality.
And it's funny, lately I've just been, well, not lately, over the last few years, when Sid, after Sid, I heard Sid say it's everywhere, you can hear the shop assistant talking truth. Even the other day I was watching what could be considered a rather down-to-earth, silly TV series. And but in between all the silliness, there were some gems of wisdom, you know, pure. I'm not even sure if the author had realized what he was saying, you know, the script writer or whatever. I think he perhaps did amongst all the silliness, but there were some real gems of just pure pointing to back to within, you know.
Yeah. I love that, Mark. I love that. I'm the same too. I love to read. I'm not a reader of many other books, to be honest, other than Sid.
Yeah.
When I feel that I want something, you know, like that, I will turn to Sid's books, because still for me, that's what's most meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where I turn to myself. You know, it just depends on the feeling of my need at that point in time, you know.
Yeah.
Where I just will have some stillness, and there may be nothing that comes out of that stillness except stillness.
Yeah.
And seeing the power that stillness without content is also a level of insight.
Mm.
You know, and I love that, and I encourage everyone that I talk to, again, as I had said earlier, you know, about in the resources, pointing back to the reader's wisdom. Mm. I really encourage anyone that I talk to in your audience as well to have that in the back of your mind, to just get reintroduced to self again. Mm. And self with a capital S, uppercase S.
Yes.
You know, self as divine mind, not the little self. Because sometimes people confuse that as well. I remember talking about that a couple of months ago to a mentee, where, again, this woman was very, very busy and kind of caught up in the busyness of her service to others.
Yeah.
well thought of counselor and coach, but she was spending so much time giving that she very subtly forgotten about herself in her desire to be of service to the world and her clients. And I could see that tiredness in her. I could feel that tiredness in her. And so I suggested, you know, have you taken time for self? And she said, well, I do. You know, I have baths and I do this and I do a bit of yoga. And, you know, that's helpful. I said, but she said, but it's also like I have a bit of an issue with taking time for myself because I have a very strong work ethic.
Yeah.
And I feel that I need to give, you know, to be in service, I need to give. And I said, but what about self? I don't mean your personal self. I mean universal self. Like time to cherish, time to be still in that formless energy of self. And there was this long pause. And she said, I didn't realize the difference between self and self. And I suspect there's a lot of us that forget that from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guilty of it all the time. Myself.
Me bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Our human nature.
And I think that's one of the subtle things that people sometimes overlook, isn't it, when you talk about the self and the self. Like you said with the uppercase S. This was the big thing for me because I'd been reading so much about, oh, you've got to find your higher self. And I'm thinking, well, within my yoga philosophical books, you know. And then it was, while listening to George, the penny finally dropped in many ways, and it was such an amazing moment as well when people suddenly see the difference, like you were pointing to, very much so with that lady you were talking to. Oh, I do take time for myself. We're not talking about the self. We're talking about the self.
That's right. And they're both important.
Of course.
I mean, you as a yoga master yourself, you know, that's so important in your life. We all recognize, and I certainly have come to that more in the last few years, of honoring my physical self more than I ever have. You know, I'm 70. I reached 70last September.
You're looking very well, Elsa. You're looking very well.
Yeah. Never felt so good in my life because... Yeah. The penny dropped, as you say, the penny dropped, and I realized my human self is equally important to my spiritual self.
Yes.
And I used to be rather dismissive of my human self. It's like, that's just the physical, you know, and I'll take care of it, but what's really important, you know, is my spiritual self.
Yes.
And it dawned on me one day that because of arthritis that my body had succumbed to because I was eating so unhealthy.
Right.
And as I started to investigate what was the cause of that and discovered inflammation and what was the cause of that and so on, and again, intellectually, I didn't want to really look at that. Wisdom wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
And wisdom kept knocking at the door. And sometimes I'd say, you know, call waiting and just move on.
Mm.
Have, you know, 3 or 4 slices of bread, unhealthy white bread, and feel worse. And then I'd do some other reading or somebody else would say, do you realize that if you ate healthier, that would reduce your inflammation? And finally, wisdom broke through and the penny dropped and I changed my eating habits. Not by willpower, but by understanding.
Mm.
And I could not believe the difference in my body and in the inflammation and the vanishing of my arthritis. Where from a year ago, prior to last May, I couldn't walk up the stairs.
Wow, right.
I had to take
an elevator. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I couldn't walk up hills. I actually came to the Tacoma conference with a foldable, a collapsible cane.
Oh,
right. Because I was sure I could get on the stage.
Right.
And I remember feeling rather embarrassed when I had lunch with a friend prior to leaving for London and the Tacoma conference and saying, I don't know how I'm going to get on the stage to do my call or to do my talk.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I can make it up there. And she said, well, just have so-and-so help you on the stage. And I said, oh, I couldn't do that. I'd be so embarrassed. I'd be so humiliated. And she said, Elsie, you know what they say, pride goeth before a fall.
Yeah.
I thought, damn. Yeah, so the penny dropped. I took the collapsible cane, but that also was wisdom knocking at the door to say, you've got a choice here.
Yeah.
You know, you can explore healthy eating and listen to that, your body, or not. Or you can have arthritis. And I thought, you know, I want a healthy body. I don't want to not be able to walk if it's at all possible. And so that turned the corner for me. And Mark, within a couple of months, honestly, I swear, the arthritis was gone. And to this day, I'm doing so well, so well. My eating habits have changed permanently. It's not that I still don't go in and out and occasionally we'll have some really, you know, good whole grain bread and stuff like that. But overall, I've moved away from grains and certain other aspects in my diet that has made a world of difference for me. And I feel so good.
And this wisdom's, it's so interesting you're talking about diet right now, because I think I mentioned to you just before we came on that I had a bit of a cold. But if I'm honest, I think I've actually got a bit of an allergy to gluten, but I love my bread and stuff so much that I'm kind of still holding on to it, and it's been lingering for a while. And I know, I need to just, even if it's just an exploration of just letting, don't have it, stay off the gluten for a month on and then come what have you. But I'm still digging in. Still, my ego is at the front and my wisdom is not quite there yet. But this conversation has been another knock on the door, I think.
I love how that comes about, honestly. You know, just, again, from the unknown, something that is relevant in the moment comes out. And I love that aspect of wisdom, that it does the work for us. You know, part of what I found in that discovery is that physically, we also have a default setting of health. And I hadn't realized that because I refused to listen to it. And I discovered it that there was a parallel between mental health having a default setting, that we have an innate mental health. I got that so clear, but I really didn't believe or understand that physically we also have a default physical health system, because I just refused to listen to it in the same way that many, many years ago I refused to listen to wisdom. And even in regard then to the parallel of listening to wisdom, point me back to the physical health system, you know, it took me a bit to come to that. And when I did, I discovered that, to my surprise, the healthier I ate, the less I missed bread and gluten. Because I was nourished. So there you go.
Again, it all comes back to wisdom, doesn't it? Just listening, getting quiet. I think it seems to be like you said, give your time. Earlier on, we were talking to that lady about giving your time for yourself. And it's when we're so busy, sometimes these alarm bells are going off, and we just kind of drown them out with the busyness of life. And so it is important. Yeah.
And there is a certain world, traditional world understanding of service. You know, that it's like service above all else. It's kind of a traditional modality of thought.
Yeah.
And it's invaluable to understand that service starts with this old phrase, physician, heal thyself.
Yeah. Because you're good to anybody if you're ill, are you?
Absolutely.
You can't serve people if you're sick. Yeah.
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 That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I'm just reminded, before we came on the air, we talked now, like you just openly said you're 70, so I'm not giving away any secrets. But you said now you're easing off, you're giving yourself a bit more time, which I'm sure people would totally appreciate. So would you just like to talk about that? It sounds like obviously you're still passionate about sharing, but you're learning to give yourself that time to enjoy a bit of semi-retirement as well.
That's right. It continues to unfold for me, Mark. Probably that journey started for me 2-3 years ago, where I became busier and busier. And I loved that. You know, I loved having all these opportunities to share with people, and I just accepted everything that came my way.
Yeah.
And so I traveled a great deal. My days were filled with calls and so on. And I loved it. And then there came a point where physically I got tired. Like I would find a feeling in my calls with people. You know, I would, because I come from home, pardon me, from Wisdom, much of the time. But what I found is that in the hour call, at about 45 minutes, I'd start looking at my watch.
Mm-hmm.
I was spent.
Yeah.
And that was a signal, but I didn't know what that was. And so my listening wasn't as laser listening.
Mm.
No, I wasn't as attentive.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I just stored it away. You know, I didn't pay it any attention. And that carried on for a while. And then it dawned on me, you know, I'm beat. And I came to Ken and he said, well, don't do so much. Yeah, exactly. Blah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. But they need me.
Yeah. They need me. Well, that's ego again, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, it was stirring. Wisdom was stirring. And so that started to manifest. And when more requests for service came in, I would wait a bit more. I became a little more selective, and I would refer people to others, or I would refer them to themselves.
Right.
You know, like if there was a certain situation where there was a real need, you get a feeling, right? You get a feeling, and that draws the service out, and I would respond. But if there were others where I'd feel, well, you know, we've talked about this a lot, you and I would be thinking to myself, and they know that. And so I think it would be as helpful for them to just have time and find their own wisdom instead of, I felt they were becoming dependent on me rather than themselves. That's a better way of putting it.
Yes. Yes.
And so I'd say, you know what, just sit with that for a month or so, see what comes to you instead of from me or anybody else.
Yes.
And every time they would come to their own understanding. And then oftentimes that was the end of my coaching or mentoring with that individual. Beautiful. Because that's the whole point, is to work yourself out of a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that started to happen. And then I thought, well, okay, good. And then as the next year came along, I again, was a little more selective in how much I took on. And then I looked at my calendar after a while and I thought, who did that? You know, who filled in my calendar like that? And I realized that once again, I'd been seduced by service.
Yeah.
So it was like, take a step forward. And sometimes it felt like two steps back. Mm-hmm. And then the penny would drop a little more and it would be three steps forward and maybe one step back. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's been for me. I was away for 7 weeks last summer. I had the privilege of traveling with my daughter and her partner in Bali and in Lombok and then to Spain, parts of Spain, and
right.
absolutely loved being in the now
yes.
with my girls.
Yeah,
absolutely that. Loved it. And in that feeling of now, nothing, no real contact came to me. It was just the space of knowing change was occurring within me. Mm. And having, being okay with the unknown, that change is happening, but I don't know what. And when I got home, I had been so immersed in the now, time with self and with my girls, and that I didn't want to see anybody when I got back home. And because it had been my 70th birthday and Ken and my 52nd anniversary, people wanted to host parties for us when I got home. And I didn't want to socialize.
Yeah.
I just had no feeling in me to get together with people other than to nest with Ken. Mm. It was so prominent in my reality. And Ken had actually, a friend had said, we'd like to throw a surprise 70th birthday party for Elsie, and he'd gone along with it. And when he saw my reluctance to socialize, he thought, gee, you know, I guess I'd better say something to Elsie because she's going to be surprised by 60 people. And so I said, no, hon, I don't want it. I'm sorry. I just, service, you know, intellect was saying, oh, you got to do this. They're your friends. They're wanting to give this to you. Self, no, I could not surpass my self. I just can't describe it any better than that. I remained kind of in seclusion for about a month. Mm. Never had that before. Mm. I just felt no draw to be with others other than with Ken, to be in my little garden in the backyard. And then slowly, slowly started to come out into the world again with tiny little bits of perspective about less is more. I had 4 or 5 major trips planned with seminars in Italy, in London, in Greece, in the States. And I thought, I don't want to do it. Yeah. And once again, like, oh, service to the world. The intellect is saying, service to the world. You can't back out now. I was at a stage where, fortunately, nothing had been actually planned. You know, no dates, just the concept of, yes, we'll do this in such a month, but no dates. Mm. And so now these people that had invited me to do this were coming and saying, could we talk and solidify our plans? I woke up one morning and I knew, I'm going to cancel them all.
Right, yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting, Mark, because I knew it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I knew that it might create a little, it might stir the pot a little bit, so to speak.
Yeah.
No, and it did. In a very healthy way, because again, some of the people that I had been talking with about doing this, they got it. Yeah. And they respected my decision to take the time and do less, understanding that when you're in integrity to self, your impact in sharing with the world is deeper. And they got that. So it served them because they heard their own wisdom. And one other individual that struggled with it a little bit, in a very short time, she also came to that understanding and went deeper herself. And I didn't know what would take the place of these four or five seminars I was going to do in a practical sense of income. I didn't care. I just knew that being in service to self, honoring that, would take care of me. And I swear, again, within 2 days, I had two requests for people to come here to do a one-on-one, like, intensive program. That then took care. I could still be in service in my home base and in a practical level also have some income. And that's how it's showing up for me now, that I am being more selective, turning people, referring people back to themselves or to others, and having less to do. And when somebody asks me about, you know, my work, I can say, honestly, I do feel more semi-retired. And as I said to you earlier, Ken doesn't laugh as long and as loudly. He smiles and he nods. He sees that I still spend a lot of time responding to emails from people all over the world. You know, that I can't simply, I respond from the heart. I respond from the soul. And I may not respond immediately, but when I do, you know, it's with love.
It was just so beautiful listening to. There have been so many crossovers in my own life at the moment with what you've been speaking about in our conversation, Elsie. It was just talking about, I think I mentioned to you earlier that I'm actually a gardener. I have my own gardening business here in Spain, and I'm also a yoga teacher, and I've been doing these conversations, and it's very much my hobby. But I got to the point where I was doing them every week, and I was it became a bit of a pressure to do one every week. And then I suddenly realized, well, what am I doing? I don't have to do them every week. It's not like I'm doing it as for free, and it's just for fun. Well, for fun, my little bit of service to humanity, whatever you want to call it. But then now I do them when I feel like it. You know, I may do four in a month, and then I may not do any for 2 months. So, but again, it's just listening to that. And there was another thing. I was speaking to a lovely lady just a few weeks ago, and very much I could, when you talked about, you got to the 45 minute point and you were spent, and I was having a great conversation with this lady, and then suddenly work things were coming into my mind and I wasn't with her, and I ended the call a bit abruptly, and afterwards I was really annoyed at myself because there was so much I wanted to explore. But and then I just thought, oh, we'll speak to her again, and I just did, and we added a bit more, and it's not actually been edited yet, but then we'll do it again. But again, it's just listening to what you've been saying all the way through this about wisdom. It's not, you don't have to go looking for it, you just have to quieten down. The soft flute analogy.
I love that. I love what you're saying, and even more than that, Mark, I love how you're touched, as I am, by this conversation. You know, I feel the depth that we have gone to in this conversation. I see it on your face. And I have such respect for your honoring of that space, of the feeling together, you know, because that's what this is all about. I'm going to dip again to another level by saying that something else came to me in this journey about less is more, is that on a practical level, in regard to how many times I would coach an individual. Like, I started off a couple of years ago or so where I kind of put together a common package where I would do eight coaching calls, you know, two a month for 4 months. And then as I began to honor self more, and found that my impact was stronger in drawing out their divinity, their wisdom, we needed less time. And so the next time somebody requested my services, I offered them a package of six, and so on and so on. Mark, I'm down to three.
Fantastic.
You know, and I'll say this too. I mean, I hope people take it in the light that I'm offering it. As my impact has increased and the number of times have gone down, on a practical level, my tuition for the calls was like the least of any of the well-known coaches and mentors in the world today.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I have a certain credibility in the Three Principles community. And like Sid also did his work for the less tuition than anybody.
Mm.
And I just followed that. You know, it's just felt right to me. Mm. But as time went on a practical level, wisdom prompted me to say, you could up your tuition a bit, my dear.
Mm.
And so I lowered the number of times, but I raised my tuition.
Yeah.
Still less than what many, many are charging in the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to say that so that there's a practical level in caring for yourself, your personal self, but it starts from self. And I also do a lot of volunteer gratis calls.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for people that have not-for-profit foundations and are raising funds for their organization to do good work, I do a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
You know, well, so there's a balance.
Yeah, so it's like this now, this conversation we're having, it's going out there for free to people. You can tap into your wisdom. There's a balance, isn't there? The balance in everything in life. I'm looking at the time, I won't keep you much longer. There was another thing, I just want to read it out, Elsie, if you don't mind. And I quickly flicked through this book, and I could have taken loads out of the book, but I thought, oh no, it might get a bit silly. But it relates to the self, what you were talking about before. But in this term, I'm always a bit, I think Sid wasn't scared of using the word God, but unfortunately these days there's so many negative, because so much negative stuff is done in the name of God. I don't always like to necessarily use the word God, but to me, God, you could also say self.
Yeah.
And there's a snippet out of this book, and it says, what is God? Or we could say, what is self? And the answer was peace, contentment, egolessness. And I think, again, that's very much what you've been pointing towards in this conversation. It's just getting out of the way and we see what's beyond the thinking mind very much.
That's right. That's right. Mm. If I may tap onto that as well, that something that has come out of me in the last couple of months as well is a deeper understanding that I am mind.
Mm.
We are mind.
Mm. Mm.
And honoring that, you know, that so often, and I as well would talk about mind as if it was too great, you know, so above and beyond me. And I'll never forget the time when Sid was asking me about how I would explain the principles, how I would talk about the principles. And I said, or the nature of the principles is what he actually asked. And I said, Sid, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I would explain that. And I just briefly said to him, I have a sense of them, you know, of the power of them. And he said, well, that's it. When you have a sense of it, That's a degree of knowing.
Mm.
And that's it. Mm. And fast forward, recently I have experienced a deeper sense that we are mind. You know, we talk about being part of mind. And if we're part of mind, we are mind. You can't be a part of something.
Yeah,
and
And
so again, it's knowing that we're not mind in the ego sense. We're mind in the honoring and cherishing of that power.
Mm.
Self, mm. as you said.
Mm. Many different names for the same thing, isn't there? Love, self, presence, mind. Yeah, yeah. Well, Elsie, it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you again. And I'm sure people have enjoyed this conversation, enjoyed listening to you. And if people, like you said, you've been very clear that you have taken your foot off the gas in some ways. But if people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they get in touch with you?
They can go to my website or they can find me on Facebook. I don't use Facebook, in my personal name, even though it's on there. I use it as 3phd.net. That's my Facebook as well. And if I may add, if you'd be kind enough to let me add this, Barbara Patterson and I are offering 3 webinars on the Nuggets of Wisdom book,
right.
Because he wrote wonderful introductions to each section,
right.
And it occurred to us to offer that to people. And so if people wanted, they could join us and have a conversation with us on those webinars that are starting, I think, February 24th, something like that.
Okay,
and
cool. I'll write that down, February 24th. And I'll mention that as well. I'm always on Facebook, so I'll point people towards that when I'm on Facebook as well. So,
thank you. I would love that because we're looking forward to having in-depth conversations as you and I have had on these webinars. And I want to thank you too. This is the second time we've talked, and the first time I also felt that such a connection with you. We didn't know each other, but we connected. And this time, more so, Mark. And I thank you for that connection.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you, Elsie. I just love having the conversations with you, as I do all my guests. Well, thanks. Thank you again. I've never met your husband, Ken, but say hello to Ken. I feel like I know him because you mentioned him quite a lot.
Also, my love to you both.
Okay, thank you. And if anybody... I'll just finish off with one or two finishing comments. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me. The best way, to be honest, is on Facebook. I'm always on Facebook, as Sheila complains to me about. Yoga Mark on Facebook. Or they can contact me at icecreamforthesoul@mail.com. But that's with the initials these days. So that's ic4ts@hotmail.com. And I've also got the trekking event coming up in April with Dr. Jack Pransky. No, obviously you know Jack. So if anybody is interested in that, give me a shout. So thanks again, everybody. And thanks again, Elsie. Will you just stay on the air after I finish the recording? I always forget to tell my guests that. Okay, before. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Bye, Elsie. Thank you.